The author of a self-help book says the term sex crime often creates confusion and leads to victim blaming. Maria Henneberry describes in her book, Nine Word Rethink to Get On with Life, how she was sexually assaulted and why she didn't report it to police. She tells GLT's Eric Stock, writing about the rape nearly meant reliving it 3 decades later.
It is difficult at times. I think that when you write well and when you write in a way that's useful and in a way that is of some sort of ripple effect value, that has value that can go out into the world in a way that has some humility around it, but also has power, it's going to be emotional. There are moments I sat and wrote and tears coming down my face. I mean, that's just the way writing is if you are not afraid of yourself in your writing. And I think that's a challenge for a lot of people, is to not be afraid of themselves. What I go through in my life doesn't define who I am. What I've had, the hurts that I've experienced, don't define me in all of that. But what does define me is how I share it and the willingness I have to help others be better.
And you had shared in the book a sexual assault that had happened to you close to 30 years ago in some detail, how it all happened and all the emotions and probably the confusion or the anger that came with that. Was that cathartic in a sense? Was that part of that spiritual release for you to be able to put that on paper?
I would say that I have worked through that in the last several years. Since I turned about 30, and I go through that in the book, there was a point about 10 years after the event where I really kind of let those floodgates open some, and I started to investigate and figure out how I was going to be with this having happened to me. And I would say in the last 10 years, all sorts of stuff, I've just kind of been able to wear my confidence more easily, and I just am able to be me. And the challenge is to not let the residue and contamination of other people's difficulties mess with you, right? This is the thing we all are challenged to do. Sometimes it's just navigating that becomes difficult. And so at some point, when you've had so many things handed to you, basically, from the damage and difficulties that other people are experiencing, you've got to figure out how you are going to stand strong in your own place. And that was one of those things, that the rape, where I was really challenged from the get-go, right out of the professional gate, because I was 21 years old when that happened, to find a way to be with that that didn't mess with the potential trajectory of my life in a way that I, in retrospect, would feel badly about.
And as we continue with Maria Henneberry, the author of Nine Word Rethink to Get On with Your Life, and you had referred to people asking about the incident because they were looking for ways either to blame you or to suggest that, well, that wouldn't happen to me. Did that make the process more difficult in coming to terms with it and in moving on from it?
In some ways, yes. But something I'm really proud of about how I process things is I'm a good observer. And so I'm able to step out of what I'm in pretty well. I always have. It's journalistic. You know this as a journalist. I'm really good at observing. And so I'm able to disconnect myself from other people's experiences enough to be able to do that, which helps tremendously in healing. So to take other people's experiences personally, I would only do that in the moments I was feeling I was defined by it. So as long as I wasn't defining myself via having been raped, then I didn't do that. The trouble was, when it happened at 21, I was still young enough that self-definition wasn't strong and solid. Now I'm 49, and I'm very solid in who I am, and I'm proud of the progress. I like who I am. I'm good with it. And so all of that grounds you, where stuff like this becomes something that happened, but it's not something that you hold residue from.
And you had also said that society needs to stop referring to it as a sex crime. If you could explain what you mean by that.
It's probably the most unusual idea that I'm sharing in this that I think has the ripple effect potential we talk about. I think that that has potential to be of some value to others, because I want to shake up the way we look at this. We hear about the fact that it's significantly underreported, rape. And we understand this statistically. It's just the numbers on paper show this. So what are the reasons for this? And I share my experience in part because I tell you why I didn't report it. And the reasons I didn't report it play into what it's called. The way that we refer to that immediately from the get-go is the perpetrator's perspective. And when you go through this as a person who survives it, it's like a double whammy right out of the gate. You not only have the trauma to cope with, you're now being told that this is the definition of that, which in the culture that we live in, we often subconsciously hand responsibility for sexual anything to the woman. And so as a 21-year-old woman, in the situation that I was in, I didn't want to hold responsibility for something that I didn't condone. The other piece of this is the fact that we now, it's been taken years for us to figure this out, right? That no means no. So if no means no, then when somebody passes through that, is it now sex? To me, it's not in what I experienced. Now it's a violation. It's a penetration crime. It's some sort of an invasion of my physicality. It is a criminal damage type of situation. It is not sex now because I didn't have a say in that experience. When I go to the gynecologist, for instance, there's nothing about that we refer to as sexual. But why is that? We take that from the perpetrator's perspective in a sex crime, but my respectful, ethically minded doctor who's been with me for years, that would be obnoxious to think of that way. And as a woman in the situation I've been in both cases, I've looked at that and thought, why is it that when I was raped, I immediately had to look at this from the angle of the person who would do such a thing?
And the perpetrator in this instance, I thought this was a powerful message in the book. Your attacker had the nerve to ask for your number afterwards, yeah. And you came to realize that this was his way of normalizing it, maybe in his own mind, maybe to you, maybe to whoever might ask about it. How did that realization change your perspective about the incident?
That was hard. I would say that was one of the key pieces that I struggled to unravel and untangle for myself over the years so that I could let that go. I really was hard on myself for that. After I was sexually assaulted, I was kept out in the place that I was with him for the rest of the night, and I didn't have the control to leave it in my situation that I share in what I knew as a 21-year-old. So by the time he took me home, to his home, not mine, because he was going to let him go because he was in my vehicle. He asked me for that, and I was petrified. The trauma was already pounding for me, but I don't even think I realized that because I was still sitting there thinking, is this my fault? What did I do? What would he do to my family if I tell anybody about this? He's willing to do this to me now. So when I was going through that, there's so much that you're swirling with. When he asked for that number, it was a reaction to robotically write that down on a scrap of paper so that I could get back to my life, so that I would be allowed to get back to my life. And that was a struggle for years to overcome.
And this is Sound Ideas. I'm Eric Stock with Maria Henneberry, who has a new book, A 9-Word Rethink to Get On with Your Life. You referred to the larger Me Too movement, and you ask, why do we have to stand in a group and slap a logo on it to be heard? To what extent do you feel the Me Too movement has changed the conversation about sexual assault and harassment?
I think it's been incredibly powerful. I think that it has opened up the eyes of a lot of people. It has opened up conversations. It's also shut some down. I think everything that's good has a side that's not so good. I think that's just the way the world works. The difficulty that I have with anything is that it gets politicized. And the challenge I have in my own situation with sexual assault is that people would think that it's a political agenda that puts me in a position where I would even share it. We are in this strange time where if you have things that are labeled a certain way, then you get labeled that way, which is a really unfortunate thing because it reduces our ability to learn from each other. And I'm so collaborative that I don't even get that mindset. I have just watched it happen. So when it comes to Me Too, my attitude is if something gives you an opportunity to see or understand something that relates to human dignity or human decency or our need, our desire, our absolute utter requirement to survive as a species, to be civil to each other, then I don't see it can possibly be all bad. I see it as being a good thing because it opens up the idea that we aren't alone. And one of the things that makes rape and sexual crimes so difficult in how we call them sexual crimes is that you become isolated and you think you're the only one. anything that can open up the eyes and turn on lights to show that you're not the only one gives us the best chance to solve it. So I think that it has more value than it does anything negative. And often I see that people who don't care for it maybe don't want to look inside themselves. That's what I wonder.
And the concern, I guess, that you're expressing is that it shouldn't have to come to that point to get the attention that it needs.
Yeah, so I have a bit of a sense of humor. And so my whole attitude with the Me Too movement, having to slap a logo on it, is we tend to brand everything, you know? Am I a brand? Are you a brand? And so the idea that that's the value that we bring to the table, is how well we're branded, is a way to take part in the reducing of our humanity, our collective humanity. And I worry about that piece sometimes. But if it's the way that organizes the information so that people can digest it, how can we say no?
That might be a reflection on the media more than anything else, I suppose. So you also address betrayal and forgiveness, that you can forgive without, quote, turning into a doormat. Are we too reluctant to forgive because it's perceived as a weakness in our society?
It's such a personal thing to forgive. It's such a personal decision and a personal journey to forgive people for virtually anything, that I don't know that I feel qualified to even offer an answer, because an answer indicates that there is a truth that I believe. What I understand for me is that my personality is so collaborative and so curious and open-minded about what people go through, that to get to the point where I have to forgive somebody is really a difficult place for me to even believe I am, because I've tried so hard to pull things together and understand things in a general sense in probably 50 ways throughout my life, right? Because we all go through so much as human beings. You have a lot of life dripping off of you by the time you reach mid-age. But I think that the key with forgiveness is to have self-compassion first. And I think that a lot of people look at it as outside of them and their self-compassion before you can have compassion for others. And so as a journalistic mind, which you again would understand, we want to understand things. We want to put those pieces of the puzzle together. And when there aren't all the pieces there, which sometimes people who supposedly hurt us don't even have themselves, those puzzles are just frustrating because you can't get the pieces put together. So in any place in your life when that word forgiveness pops up, it's personal.
And as we continue with Maria Henneberry, the author of 9-Word Rethink to Get On With Your Life. Now, there is a lot of fun stuff in the book. As you talk about growing up in a family of performers, you called playful yet wildly serious. And you recall sleeping in a hotel dresser drawer just weeks old while your family was on the road and you were performing at an extremely young age. And you'd said that this was normal to you. You just figured that that was life growing up. At what point did you realize in your life that this was not normal?
I was well into grade school before I realized that not everybody went home to practice the unicycle, to practice their gymnastics for an hour a day, to jump on the organ or piano and do their practicing and their drums practice that I had to. And I thought that was normal because I was the fifth of six kids. And so every human being surrounding me that I had any close contact with was doing all the same stuff. And there's six kids, mom and dad. That's a big household of activity and a lot of creative activity at that. So by the time I was in mid-third grade, I'd say, I had that revelation, and it was mind-blowing, because it just didn't occur to me that this wasn't the life we all had, because it made such sense to me, which became my normal. I grew up with the mantra, creativity with discipline is a force to be reckoned with. It was a mantra, a drumbeat in my life. My parents shared that with me more than once. I have a free-spirited nature, but because of the discipline that we have had growing up, I was able to learn to pin things down. So I'm actually lucky that I had that balance in my life. And so I think it's really interesting the way that I was raised, because it offered me a completely different perspective. I grew up in a small town in rural Illinois, and so I understood very directly that lifestyle and what it took and the sensibilities of that lifestyle. But then we would hit the road and I would be hanging out in auditoriums and theaters and on fair stages and convention floors with all sorts of people from all walks of life, you know, playing with kids in forests and on campgrounds that maybe weren't even from this country at that time. And I it just completely changed the way that I view the way that our world around us works.
That is author Maria Henneberry with GLT's Eric Stock. In writing the book, Nine Word Rethink, to get on with life, she says her background as a journalist helped her to ask hard questions of herself so she can help others navigate through challenging times in their lives.